Quito Planning Commission.
And start with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Clerk, would you call the roll, please?
Commissioner Maynard?
Here.
Commissioner Miller?
Here.
Commissioner Onan? Vice Chair Smith?
Here.
Chair Fuller?
Present.
Thank you.
At this time, we'll have the public forum. If anyone here, if anyone is here to speak on anything other than an agenda item, we welcome you to present a speaker slip to the Madam Clerk, and we'd love to hear from you. Do we have any?
No, Chair Fuller.
Okay. We close that portion of our meeting. Is there, Madam Clerk, is there any amendments or adjustments to the agenda?
None.
None. Thank you. So the first item on our agenda.
Item A1 is the administrative agenda. It's the Planning Commission minutes for the Planning Commission meeting of February 26, 2018.
Do we have a motion to approve?
I make a motion to approve the minutes.
I'll second.
Any changes or corrections? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Next item, Madam Clerk.
Item B1 is a discussion item. It's the Historic Preservation Project Context Statement.
Okay, and who will be leading us here?
I will. Good evening, Chair Fuller. Good to say that. and other commissioners. Let's see, I'm glad to be here tonight to share with the Planning Commission the draft of the context statement that's been underdeveloped for several months now. The context statement is the first step in the development of the long-awaited historic preservation ordinance. As you may or may not know, the context statement will establish a common foundation for the regulations, process, and eligibility criteria that will be the next step in the process. When I say common, we might all have different ideas of what's historic. And what this does is, as a city, we come together to set up what we believe as a group, what that context is for our community. I want people to remember that the context statement looks at people and human activities that have shaped the city of Goleta kind of from a high level. You know, we're used to looking at documents that are, you know, really down deep, looking at the nitty-gritty of whether it's any, you know, environmental impact or on a development project. This is an opportunity to step back and look back like I'm envisioning, like we're in an airplane, you know, at the 20,000 foot level, looking at the shapes and the forces that have shaped the community. Kind of like if you look at a forest from an airplane, you know, you see the shapes that form, that define a forest. You don't see the nitty-gritty of the particular tree or the forest floor. And that's, I kind of want us to kind of keep that in mind as we look at the context statement. Because the context statement does a broad brush of highlighting the big events that have shaped the setting of the city from a historic standpoint. What we are asking the Planning Commission tonight is for their input in terms of the adequacy of the context statement, in terms of does it appropriately identify and discuss the large patterns of development, including architecture, you know, starting from the, you know, we're really blessed to have a large and important presence of the Native American community in Goleta all the way through about 1969. And that's, I mean, that is a huge time frame. So we have, the city has asked, or has hired HRG consultants out of Pasadena to assist us with the development of this ordinance. And I am going to turn over a large portion or the next portion of the presentation to Christine Lazaretta, who is sitting to my right, who is a managing principal of HRG. And she also has with her Molly Eicher, who has worked extensively on this project as well. So I'm going to turn it over to Christine.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, I can turn.
Thank you, Lisa. Good evening, commissioners. Thank you for having us here tonight. As Lisa mentioned, we're going to give you an overview of the context document, which is just one portion of the historic preservation program for the city of Goleta. So we're, even though we've been working with the city for months and we've had several outreach meetings with the community, we're still at the beginning of this process. So we're going to walk you through where we are to date and then talk about the next steps at the end. As Lisa mentioned, HRG is just one part of the project team. Molly and I have been working on the historic context statement as it relates to the built environment. Greenwood and Associates and their staff, John Foster, are working on the archaeological study. And Lisa had asked at the beginning of the project, I think at council direction, to include a tree study as well, even though the city has already done a lot of work in terms of identifying and regulating trees throughout the city. We thought it was an important component of the historic context as well. So Cy Carlberg has worked on a tree and landscape study as part of the overall historic context statement. Our scope of work is divided into several phases, as I mentioned. The first phase is the development of the context statement itself. And the focus here, as Lisa mentioned, is to look at the broad patterns of development throughout the city and try to understand why the built environment, in our case, looks the way that it does, and to use that information moving forward in the development of a preservation ordinance specific to Goleta and the identification of potentially eligible historic resources. So once we get through at least the beginnings of the development of the preservation ordinance, we will also be rolling out findings, preliminary findings from our historic resources survey, and how those two things will intermingle to create the preservation program in Goleta. And then when everything is finalized, we'll be working with city staff about how to roll that out to the community and how to do some outreach related to historic preservation and historic preservation policies in the city. So my focus is on the built environment, as I mentioned. So I'm going to just walk you through the historic context statement as it relates to sort of the above ground resources. A historic context statement is a framework, as we've mentioned, for evaluating potential properties with potential historic significance. So it is meant to place resources in the appropriate context and use that information to identify what might be historically significant in the city. It's not intended to be a comprehensive history of everything that's happened in the city of Goleta or everyone who's lived here, but it's meant to sort of paint a broad brush about what happened and when and why and how that relates to the built environment. We do have three chapters, as I mentioned, and the document that you received for review includes all three chapters. So we start with the built environment. There's a chapter on archaeological resources, which basically sort of takes you up to where chapter one starts. There's a little bit of overlap in the early periods, but that's the idea. And then there's a tree and landscape study, which again is just meant to sort of relate primarily historic trees to the built environment context and how to think about those as potential historic resources. I would say particularly as we're looking at neighborhoods, you know, keeping in mind the idea of street trees, landscape features, maybe historic trees that might predate some of the buildings that are on some of these properties. So that information is included to sort of tie everything together. Our scope of work for the built environment context statement covers the periods of development from about 1785 through 1969. That period was selected because it takes you to about 50 years in the past by the time that this project is completed. We are looking at historic trends and patterns throughout all of those phases of history, and we're looking at all property types. So that means residential development, commercial, industrial, institutional development like schools and churches. Basically any kind of building type is something that we would be looking at as part of our study. We started this project by doing quite a bit of research, and this was primarily undertaken by my colleague Molly, who spent many, many days in archives at UCSB, at the Santa Barbara Historical Society, at the Goleta Valley Historical Society, trying to go back and look at things like historic maps, census data, period newspaper articles, any primary sources that we could find that related to the history of Goleta, and we used that as a foundation for developing the context statement. We have divided the context into a series of themes, and these are organized chronologically. So we start with what is our earliest period of development, which we called Mexican independence in the Rancho period, and that's in the late 19th century. And then we move into the late 19th and early 20th century, where Goleta and La Patera are starting to develop as towns, and you start to see some of the foundations of what Goleta became during this period. And then we have a period between World War I and World War II. And then we do discuss Goleta during World War II, even though there aren't very many historic resources related to that period. It's a very important period here in Goleta, particularly, you know, because of things that happened here during the war, because of the coastal location, that very brief period during the war was important to Goleta's development. So we have a theme related to that. And then we talk about post-World War II development through 1969. And then we have a separate theme about architecture and design, which is where we discuss architectural styles throughout the city and things that might be significant because of their architectural merit, their association with a master architect, things that are significant for their design, maybe in addition to or instead of being significant for being an example of a type of development. So I'm just going to quickly walk you through this. Again, this is sort of how the document is organized, starting with the Mexican independence and the Rancho period. During this time period, we're looking at basically very large, primarily cattle ranches, which will eventually be subdivided and redeveloped as smaller farms and ultimately as residential development in the city. We do discuss important figures in history in Goleta during each of these periods. During this early period, we're primarily looking at Daniel Hill and Nicholas Den, who were two of the very important landowners in early Goleta. And then, as I mentioned, we move into late 19th and early 20th century development. This is where we start to see the ranchos subdivided into smaller farms. With the addition of more people coming into the area to work on these farms comes the commensurate commercial development that was happening along Hollister Avenue. This is also the period that we have two towns, La Goleta and La Patera, are sort of developing concurrently during this period. A lot of population increase, so a lot of changes are starting to happen in the early 20th century. The first schools and churches are developed during this period. So again, you start seeing the establishment of a town, or what would become a town during this period of development. Between the wars is really when Goleta became a booming citrus producer and an oil town. This is when oil wasn't discovered during this period, but we start to see significant extraction happening. This is when the Elwood oil field was established in 1928, which was had a significant force in the development of the area. The railroads are coming through. There's a lot of growth and development happening during this time. 1933 is when the two towns became one and were renamed Goleta, and that was 100% done by the post office. So they sort of made that decision that they would move the post office to Goleta, name the town Goleta, and that's what it has been ever since. During World War II, as I mentioned, there were some specific important things that happened in Goleta during that time, so we needed to discuss those in the context statement in order to set up what happens here after the war. Much like many resources and airfields along the West Coast during this time, there was a Marine base at the Santa Barbara Municipal Airport. The oil fields were actually attacked by a Japanese submarine, and there was a prisoner of war camp in the area. So there were important things happening, like I said, specifically in Goleta during the war. After the war, in a lot of Southern California, you see really large population booms right after the war, starting in the late 1940s. Here, that didn't really start happening until the early to mid-1950s. So we still see a pretty small farming community here from immediately after the war into the 50s. But when the Kachuma Dam was completed in 1953, aerospace companies started moving to the area in the mid-1950s, and the UCSB campus was established, is when we really start to see population growth and a lot of significant residential development in the area. A little note about the residential development after the war. We're seeing a lot of subdivisions, and I can't remember the number. I think there were 12 new subdivisions in the 50s and then more continuing into the 1960s. So we're starting to see former farmlands are now converted into post-World War II suburban tracts. There are a lot of neighborhoods with nice examples of ranch houses in them. There's at least one tract here that has mid-century modern houses that were designed by noted architects. There's also, of course, new institutional and commercial development to support the growing population. So things really changed quite a lot starting in the 1950s. And as I mentioned, there's also a theme related to architecture and design. So we identified the primary examples of architectural styles that we saw in Goleta. As part of our early work for this project, we did do basically a windshield drive around the entire city and made notes of potentially historic properties that we saw, architectural styles that we saw, you know, any kind of information that would help us develop the context statement. So the styles are based on what we actually saw doing this drive around. That's not to say that, you know, someone may not discover an additional a building designed in a style that we didn't see during that survey that could be added in the future. One thing I did want to note at the beginning of this is that these documents tend to be living and breathing documents that continue to change as additional preservation work is done in the city. You know, as people come forward, once you have an ordinance and want to have their properties designated, they may dig up additional research information that we didn't have as part of our overall look. So we fully expect that this document will continue to evolve. And then, as I mentioned, we have an archaeological chapter that was created by John Foster. He will be at the council meeting next week. He's not here tonight, but he's definitely been very involved in this process throughout. He participated in one of our outreach meetings and answered a lot of questions from the community at that meeting. And he has had a lot of consultation with the Barbarino Band. So they had significant review and also input directly into the chapter. And then the tree and landscape study, which again is meant to be a broad brush look at primarily potentially significant street trees, or if there are native or potential historic trees on private property. You know, again, it's meant to guide the city. These are the types of things that were noted by an expert arborist as she did her drive around the city. So it's information to keep in mind as we develop the ordinance. And then in your staff reports, and we have been using these questions throughout this process at all of our outreach meetings, but these questions are meant to sort of identify what we are hoping to accomplish with the development of the context statement. So we want to hear from all of you, and we've been asking the community for this input as well. You know, are we adequately representing the important patterns of development in Goleta? Again, without, you know, telling the story of everything that happened at every property, but identifying those broad patterns and trends of development. Are we adequately summarizing the how and why of the development history? And ultimately, the goal is, are we providing enough foundation to identify potential historic resources in Goleta and adequately plan for their regulation by the city? And those questions are basically the same for the built environment, for the archaeological study, and for the tree study.
So back to me. So as you may be aware, in the fall, we held two workshops with the community on the built environment chapter and the archaeological chapter. And then we also took the tree and landscape study to the PTAC, the Public Tree Advisory Commission, at their November meeting to get their input as well. And there were, I think, three or four members of the public who attended that meeting and provided input. Overall, we had about nine written comments we got that are up on the city website, and there were a couple more comments made at the PTAC meeting. I will say that, and I think Christine will echo, that the input that has been provided so far has been very invaluable, to help us shape the document that is before you today and to get a sense of the community views, to craft the document in the shape that it is today. and we've used, you know, there were things the consultants were able to use what was, you know, made changes based on what was appropriate for the level of document. And we want to go back to, you know, high-level document, not something like an environmental impact report where, you know, the detail, you know, with being focused on the details. I will mention that we got a few comments today. I believe you've got two or three comment letters, three. And I will say that as we came in today, there was an email from Ron Nye that I don't know if you want me to read it to you or not, but there's also an email here from Ron Nye that came in at 5:50. I can if you want. Okay. This is Lisa. I'm writing to express my very strong support for Historic Resources Group's recent historic context statement of March 5th, 2018. It's a comprehensive, fact-based, well-written, and adheres to rigorous professional historical standards. As I've stated before, I appreciate the extent to which HRG listened, understood, and incorporated suggestions and edits submitted by the public and professional historians. This document will be an essential planning, educational, and governing tool in Goleta for many years to come. I want to point out a small error, however. On page 97, the photo for the style agricultural vernacular states Bunkhouse and Horace Sexton Museum. In fact, the one-story building closest to the camera is a former garage presently occupied by the Rancho La Patera Visitor Center, and the two-story building is the former bunkhouse now occupied by the RLP Administrative Center. You may want to double-check this with Amanda D. That must be Amanda Della Chia of the Goleta Valley Historical Society in the event that a recent name change has occurred. Many thanks to you, the city, and HRG for completing this very important task of providing Goletans with their own modern history of their community, Ron Nye. We will, you know, print this out and get a copy to you all probably tomorrow. Let's see, where was I? Oh, so the emails that I'm aware of, there was one from Mr. Messner questioning how the tree and landscape study relates to the urban forest management plan. Back when we were developing the tree and landscape plan, we had the former, she was not former at that point in time, Public Works Director Rosemary Gaglione was involved in the crafting and the drafting of that document, and then we also took it to PTAC. The idea is that they will work together. When the Urban Forest Management Plan was adopted by council adopted it but put on hold the designation of historic trees until we get through the historic preservation project to make sure that we coordinate that that we work together. So as we go forward with drafting any regulations, we're totally expecting to work closely with Public Works staff to make sure that the two do work together. That's been our goal and our intention the whole time. Then there was a comment by Mr. Cox, and we're happy to look at that comment about the language, the choice of language in that one particular section about World War II. We'll look at that and make adjustments as needed. And then I know you said there was an email. Is the third email? Oh, okay. About, we'll look at the aerospace business. That wasn't.
This may have come in while we were on the road.
Yeah.
So, I'm sorry.
And then we also had another email. I've had an email exchange today with one of our local archaeologists who has concerns about the section, and we will be working with him and working with Mr. Foster to make adjustments as we can. And he said he'd be providing written comments to the council next week. So I think that's it in terms of public comments. And then in terms of next steps.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. The next steps, we are planning on asking the city council next week to review the context statement at their meeting. We are not asking for council adoption of the document, nor are we asking for your recommendation. We are just asking for your input tonight. The idea is that, like I said, we want to set a common foundation. So as we go forward developing the ordinance, we're all talking from the same same place. And then when we come back with the, when we find, you know, when we work through the ordinance with the regulations and the eligibility criteria and what our process will be for historic designation of historic properties, we will then be asking for the context document to be adopted, and we will be asking for your recommendation then on both the document, you know, the context statement and the ordinance. It'll all kind of come together at the very end. But we wanted, it's important, we didn't want to just go forward and use this document to craft, start on an ordinance without having both, you know, your buy-in and the council buy-in. Once we have council's acceptance of the document, we're, like I said, we're not asking for adoption, we will then start workshopping with you, with the Planning Commission, on the ordinance, you know, identifying the different topics and getting your input and feedback before HRG and myself start working on developing an ordinance. We are planning, with any luck, to be back in April to start that process with you, and then be working through the spring on developing an ordinance, and going from there. So I think that is the extent of our presentation, and we would be happy to answer any questions you have.
Any questions from commissioners? Yeah, Commissioner Smith.
Thank you. I had a question about, just in terms of the built environment section as a whole, I'm wondering, just as sort of a philosophical approach to the research, built environment history inevitably excludes certain histories. And so I'm just sort of wondering, as an approach, how you sort of accommodated that, or looked into factors as to, you know, who had access to land or the ability to build versus those who didn't. And then looking at, and with that in mind, thinking about activities that were potentially taking place in a built environment versus, you know, who did the building or who owned the land. If you could speak sort of briefly to that.
Sure. Although that's a big question to answer briefly, but I will try. I would say that we are definitely cognizant of that, and that's something that the preservation movement in general has been much better about in the last probably 10 years or so than certainly it was at the beginning. So our work, because this is the first step of all of this in the city of Goleta, and we're sort of starting at ground zero, we focused on the development of the overall story, as you're seeing, with not a lot of focus on, you know, women's history or, you know, ethnic community history. Where we had information, we mentioned it in the context statement, and we're certainly aware, like you said, that people who are building the buildings aren't necessarily the ones who are creating all of the history there. A lot of cities that we've worked with in the past, and we're still working on these types of projects now, sort of start with a foundational document like what we're doing, and then do additional study down the road to incorporate additional layers of history. So, for example, in the city of Los Angeles right now, we're working on Asian American history to a much deeper and more comprehensive level than what was able to be done with the citywide historic context statement. And like I said, lots of cities that we're working with are taking that approach. Mm-hmm. So part of what we would do with this document is make some recommendations to the city of things to keep in mind moving forward, areas mm-hmm. of additional study. Like I said, if people come forward with, you know, a house and they know a deeper level of the history than what we were able to uncover, that should all become part of the record of the history of Goleta. So I guess the short answer is we're anticipating, again, that, you know, we'll learn more as, you know, things progress here in Goleta. But this document, because of the sort of large scope of this project, focused more on this sort of overall overview history.
Could I add to that? Because I have a question that's quite related to that.
Sure, please.
I was also quite struck by the difference when I looked at, say, the built environment section versus the archaeological section in terms of the level of detail. And when looking at the built environment section, I felt like we got the whole life story of most of the landowners. But I think we, I'm not sure if there was a single Chumash individual who was named as an individual person. And I think that's incredibly problematic. As we look at page 144, which goes into the evaluation process, there were two things that were noted. One of the things that the California Registry and the National Registry of Historic Places looks at, they look at the events and they look at the people. And we didn't really describe the events or the people that exist here and have been such an important part of the history over time. So I think that focus on land ownership here is actually really problematic, to the point that I struggled with the question that was asked around, does the archaeological study provide adequate framework and understanding of the importance of this history? I felt like I got so little information on people and events, and that it was so striking the difference between those two. So we were able to get that detail for the landowners, but we weren't able to get that detail for other very important parts of our community. So I just want to echo some of the comments and add to that there.
Thank you, Commissioner Maynard. Yes, Commissioner Miller.
My question is, to put the historic context statement in context, which, as I understand it, would lead to potentially an historic preservation ordinance, I'd like to have you just speak briefly to what an historic preservation ordinance looks like. What topics would it cover? I assume it covers things like historic structural preservation. But beyond that, I guess I just don't know.
I think between the two of us, we'll answer the question. The ordinance will establish the criteria by what a structure would be deemed historic. It probably will be age, but there'll be other factors. It will establish the review process by which a site or a building could be designated historic. It'll establish what that means to be historic. What the review process, if there's extra level of review, whether we set up a separate commission to look at historic preservation, or if it gets blended into, your work, DRB's work, the city council, or some combination. What am I missing? I think that's
if the city decides to implement any incentives,
right,
for historic property owners. That's another, in addition to what you mentioned, that's sort of the other big question.
Yeah, and one of the questions will be, how properties get designated and what that means within the community.
So the historic context statement, which we have before us today, which includes a considerable amount of detail, at least about the period of time from middle 19th century up to 1969, essentially forms the basis for determining, potentially forms the basis for determining what is considered historic. Is that a fair statement?
Yes, but Ms. Lazaretto was mentioning, right, that's the snapshot right now. I would think that as time progresses,
sure,
we'll probably be adding decades,
sure,
because the 50-year horizon will keep growing,
sure,
or rolling, rolling.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Commissioner Maynard, please.
Okay, a couple of other questions. Can you talk a little bit about how the BBCI recommendations on page 156 will be incorporated? So I see that the recommendations are here, but it wasn't quite clear if those are being incorporated or not.
I will start, and then Lisa can add to it. And, John Foster would be able to answer this much better than I can. But the idea was to... our scope of work includes all the way through implementation of this project. John, his original scope of work just included the development of the context statement, which is why he included recommendations in this version of the document and ours does not.
I also think that the amount of outreach and the work that he did with the local community, we wanted to make sure that was represented in the document. So, and we wanted to make clear what was the recommendation coming from John versus the recommendations from the community, so that those can both be taken into account as we're further developing the ordinance.
The idea with the recommendations, those will be things that we will consider, or you will consider, and the City Council will consider as we develop the ordinance. They are recommendations, and they're not, you know, as we go through the workshop process and the public hearing process on the ordinance, you know, some portion of these may or may not, you know, end up being in the regulations that go forward and that get adopted. But they're here as a representation of what John Foster believes is appropriate or would suggest, and what the BBCI has suggested as well.
Okay. I'll save additional comments on that for the deliberation phase. Two additional questions. Actually, we answered that one. So here's a naive question, because I'm not used to doing these types of documents. How do we handle buildings that are not meant to be permanent? So I looked at some of the buildings on here, such as, say, the Quonset Hut is was explicitly designed to be a very temporary building. And so... What are your thoughts on that, and how does that fit into historic building ordinances?
That is a very good question, and it's something that we grapple with all the time, especially with, you know, there are, you know, food stands that were meant to move around the city, or, you know, there are lots of resource types, especially from after the war, that weren't ever meant to be permanent, but they have taken on, you know, significance. The Quonset Hut is a really interesting building typology that was developed for a specific reason, but then, you know, sort of became used for a lot of other reasons, and many of them that were meant to just be there for the 4 years during the war have stayed. I think the answer to your question in terms of regulation is really up to you. All cities handle it a little bit differently. I've worked in cities that have actually designated Quonset huts as historic landmarks, and we've worked in other cities that say, you know, those aren't important to us. And, you know, what is in the ordinance is also separate from what ultimately ends up getting designated by the city. And I'm not sure, again, because we're not there, you know, if you're going to be adopting sort of an inventory of the preliminary things that we looked at, or if we're going to just put an ordinance in place, and then in order to be actually listed, someone would have to come forward and say, I believe my Quonset hut is eligible and here's why, and then it would be up to the city to decide if you're actually going to designate it and regulate it. So it's a good question, and it's not an easy one to answer. And, you know, and we're seeing too, some things in terms of materials aren't meant to last forever and they start to deteriorate. So those are all things to sort of keep in mind as we're developing the program.
Thank you very much. That was just my naivete. I'll save everything else for deliberation after public comment.
Commissioner Miller. Sorry, Smith.
Thank you. And then just quickly on Chapter 3, the tree and landscape study, is it anticipated that this ordinance, would this apply to both potentially private and public trees, depending on their historic context, or is it anticipated the focus would just be on the trees in the public spaces?
It's primarily anticipated to focus on the public trees, mm-hmm. but it's possible. Mm-hmm. Again, it depends on, you know, how our ordinance development comes, you know, how we develop the ordinance. Mm-hmm. It's possible on private, but it's the primary focus has been on public.
Okay. And then in terms of that section is sort of titled tree and landscape study. I felt like I got more sort of on the tree side than the landscape side.
Yes.
So I don't know if you could speak to that.
Sure. We agree. And we were referring to it as the tree and landscape study before the study was done, just to give the consultant an idea that, you know, if there were, you know, significant landscape features that weren't trees that she identified, that we could certainly include those. But now that the study's been completed and the focus really was on trees, we are certainly open to renaming that chapter to something more appropriate.
Any other questions for staff? Okay, we'll proceed to the public comment section. I have two slips here. Is there anybody else who wants to bring a slip up and speak? We'll start with Ernestine Ignacio de Soto, and then we'll have Furman Murray.
What is my timer here?
3 minutes.
2 minutes, 3 minutes? I don't know if I can sum up 13,000 years in 3 minutes, but I'll give it a shot. And let's see. It looks like we're totally don't exist until 1900. So I will say I'm Ernestine Ignacio hyphen de Soto, daughter of Mary J. Yee, last Chumash speaker. And your Maria Ignacio sign down here on Patterson is my great-great-grandmother. And we did have land here, by the way, believe it or not, this was all our land. And we were the stewards, and we didn't have any massive Thompson fires or landslides. We did have an occasional tsunami, but probably 100 or 200 years apart. Of course, we did a lot of praying and sweating and so forth. But you're sitting on, the airport's sitting on our village sites. The two Marriotts are sitting on our village sites. The Devereux is sitting on our village sites. Bacara is on our village sites. And just about all of Goleta, because this had a major village, as you have Sacramento capital, that was ours, our capital here. And all the other 13 villages throughout Santa Barbara and Goleta were answerable to them as we are to you people. And I'm not really a Galitan, but my family is the Yees, Y-double-E. And and as far as if you're taking information from Walter Tompkins, you may as well take it from me because he's not from here. A lot of his information he got from old-timers here and historians. Also, Daniel Hill had my great-grandmother as their servant, slave, whatever you want to call it, but she did run away. Also, I'm also a Roe, and they married a sexton, but I am half Roe, unfortunately, and they were Goleta. So with that being said, I hope you'll think about that. Thank you.
Thank you. Furman Murray?
Thank you, Chair and Commissioners and staff and HRC. My name is Fermina Murray.
I apologize,
Don't
Fermina.
Worry, it's my handwriting.
A didn't escape
yeah.
me.
And I echo what Ranai said about the context and how really well written and a lot of work went into that, and really applaud that, applaud all the work of the HRC and the sensitivity which they have really responded. And I think this is where, I think this is Ernestine de Soto has spoken on that, and I think right now it's just the best time to move into that section of the history and really, for once and for all, really do a good job. And bring that 13,000 years and more into our consciousness, and we are like she said, we are sitting in all these the ancestors are right underneath us, and that somehow has to come up and guide the city. I really feel strongly about this. That will be a huge blessing for not only our city, but in all of California. And if we are as a city starting this new movement of really bringing this history forward in the way it is, the way it was, with the elders working with us and all the people, I think we will reach a certain level of consciousness that is so needed right now with the way the climate change and all the things that have happened. I mean, the things that have happened in Montecito, if you go back to the Chumash history, you would know so much about the context of that, where the floods came down. So I'm just so excited about that, and I know that section will be well done. Thank you.
Thank you. And Frank Arredondo, got that right.
30 minutes? Nobody, you guys aren't going anywhere.
They could have used 30 minutes also.
So my name is Frank Arredondo, Chumash. I've been before you guys in the past 14 years talking about cultural resources. Went to school, been working. I have a lot to say about this. I honestly wish Mr. Foster would have contacted me when he did his initial research. I would have given him specific, pertinent information specifically to your organization and what needs to be done. That's what I've been doing, is critiquing your CRM process over these 14 years. So I'm an invaluable resource. At the end of this, I am available. I'm willing to help you guys. But there's a lot of stuff messed out, technically. The foundation for legally sound historic preservation regulations is the goal here. You're being asked if this context statement adequately provides a framework to understand the importance of archaeological resources in Native American within the city of Goleta. The framework to understand the importance of ethnograph and cultural heritage in the local Chumash. I didn't see anything in there about ethnography in there. So there's a big gap. You make a mention in it, but there's no reference to it. Maybe I'm mistaken. But to me, this looks like the foundation to the Tower of Pisa. It's got a 5.5 degree slope on it. You don't see it right now, but once you start building on it with the regulations, you're going to be way skewed off. Allow me to point out, table one, the attributes. Now, the table one is found on page 118 of your report. The attributes that you have listed there has a site name, general period, site type, artifacts. Then you put features and burials. Now, when I'm actually opposed to you guys putting burials in here. It puts a negative skew on the importance, and I mean, burials are important, but there are other things that are equally just as important. I'd like to give you this, if I can pass this to her, and you guys can take a look at it.
The clerk, please.
That's enough for everybody.
Thank you.
What this is,
I'm terribly sorry, I'll try to rush. What this is a sacred lands inventory. So anytime a monitor or an MLD comes across a site, wants to identify it as sacred, they notify the Heritage Commission. This is the form that we fill out. There's sacred, power area, worship, ritual site, burial site is only one, ritual site, polygraph, village site, housebuilt, campsite, the list goes on. If you're going to have an attribute table that includes burials, you should include all of these. They are all equally important. Two, table two. It has reports, and I mentioned this back in November. It has reports listed from the Information Center that are back from the 70s and 80s. There's only two reports on there that list that are past 2004. My comment in November was that you're using this to determine the significance of where we stand, but you're starting off at a starting point that is really skewed. You're telling me in the past 14 years you've only had two archaeological reports and updated to the Information Center of all the development projects the city has proposed? That is a severe, egregious misinformation, misinterpretation. So I think that was that it. Oh, lastly, just 1 second, consultation. My cousins over here made a mention of AB 58. There is no AB 58. It is AB 52, which is government consultation, and SB 18, which is all government consultation. You need verbiage that includes that information in the context statement because you're building the framework to consultation. And it's very significant and important because at this point, you're only supposed to consult with those groups in order to meet the criteria. There are specific legal documents that you have to send out to do that. The County of Santa Barbara just updated their cultural resource guidelines and included verbiage that addresses that. I strongly suggest you use some of that material and add it into yours. Because if not, I'm going to be here calling you out on it. Every single project. Where's AB 52? Where's AB 52? One after another. Other than that, like I said, I'm more than happy to help you. You've got my email. I've been emailing you for 14 years. You know who I am. I want to see you guys do really good. I really do. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner, yeah, any other speakers from the public?
I just have a quick clarification on the last comment.
Sorry.
So the speaker, Mr.
Arredondo,
had mentioned page 118, the large page is 136. So if anybody was looking for that reference, it is page 118. It's just on ours. Sometimes it's easier to find the big page. So I wanted to clarify that.
Thank you. Okay, so we're not here really to accept this document, it sounds like. It's nice we have this presentation, and we appreciate the public's comments on this. Madam Prosky?
Well, we're interested in your thoughts if it, you know, that list of questions that, yeah, those list of questions, if you have input on those, that would be useful to us as we go forward. I'm not sure what else. We're very much interested in hearing what the Planning Commission, if they have specific input on areas that you feel we need additional work on, or if we've gotten certain sections in a good place. And like I said, we're not asking either you or the City Council to adopt this in the next little bit. It's just a, you know, like I said, we're back to, you know, do we have a common foundation to be going forward to crafting an ordinance is what we're trying to accomplish.
Okay, so we'll have a commission discussion then.
Before we do that, I could
Commissioner
I,
Miller?
Could I ask a question of,
got that right.
Of staff?
Yes, please.
I guess before we start our discussion, I'd like to hear a reaction to the speaker's comments about the felt inadequacy of the archaeology section. Can you address that?
We are willing. I mean, we will look at that. We've had other comments from some other people about that not being as in depth as desired. So it's something that we will be looking at and talking with Mr. Foster about what additional work can be done, and probably also the BBCI to get assistance on that.
And was it Greenwood and Associates that were primarily responsible for that section?
Yes.
Thank you.
So I'll follow up that question. So how is this sort of a living and an evolving document? We have this here. Some parts of it are very detailed. Some of it are kind of like an overview like the aerospace industry kind of totally misses the electronics aspect of Goleta. You know, it's like, was there an electronics industry here? Is there one here now? I don't, you know. And one glaring miss, you know, that I couldn't help it, was the aerospace lines. No mention of them when they're the ones who put up the giant hangars where FedEx is right now on Fairview on the airport. I mean, those are giant hangars, so they're a built environment. There's a reason they're there, and it's because Aerospace Lines was building the Guppies there, which were, pretty advanced for their time. The largest heavy lift aircraft at the time, and they were headquartered here in Goleta. So, you know, when you talk about aerospace, I just found it hard to believe you missed that. But, you know, and I'm sorry, Raytheon, you know, makes magnetic heads. I don't know exactly, you know, I'm sure that they're involved, you know, tape drives are involved in airplanes, but magnetic heads are totally a piece of, of equipment that are involved in recording, recording discs. So there's, I think, some room for further specificity and accuracy, and maybe even opportunities for the public to contribute to this, as they are, you know, bearers of historic knowledge themselves. I appreciate the work that's been done to reach out to the public and ask them, but, you know, once you have a draft document, it's now something that people can, you know, work with and add to, and I would hope that we could add to this, and you know, you call it a high airplane view, but, you know, many places it's more low, and I think it's great to have a more thorough and even a little closer, you know, look at the Goleta's history going back 1,300 years. The reason why we have a Maria Ignacio Creek, you know, would be not a bad story in here. So that's my comments anyway. Okay. Yes, Commissioner Maynard.
Couple of comments. So in the archaeological section, in the site evaluation, it has some information for sort of the National Registry of Historic Places. It has the research domains and site analysis. I think what I was missing in this is sort of more of a cultural analysis too, and thinking, like I was looking at the BBCI recommendations, and I thought they had some very poignant language in here around local Chumash consider all prehistoric and historic archaeological sites mapped and unmapped to be sensitive and significant. And I thought that having more language about the cultural importance of some of these areas could be important in the site assessment language. So I'd like to see more of that. I would like some further analysis of the archaeological section, make sure we're in line, especially with state laws on that one. So it sounded like there was a couple of particular state laws that were called out. I want to make sure we're in line with those. I said this a little bit in the questions at the end, but again, with public comment, I think it's important to bring it up. In the archaeological section, it covered thousands of years of history, and yet was still shorter than the section that was on 150 years of history. And so I think we can do more with that, and particularly naming people and places, people and events that were important to the places here in Goleta, because that is going to be an important part of the analysis stage. And so without that context for the people that have been important over history outside of landowners, and without those events, I think it's going to be hard for us to make some of these judgments and the variety of that. And I'd like to see more detail on the history of the Chumash people here, but also the history of other immigrant communities as well. I saw some of that in the language, but I think more of that could be done. So that's another piece. On the urban forestry management plan, I'd like to see a call out in the recommendation section to say that some language has already been developed in the management plan around requirements. There was a mention in the recommendations of the plan, and I really appreciated that. But I think just going a little bit further to say there are already some specific regulations that we may consider adopting and noting that. I was impressed in the public comment that we received on that, really seeing the detail of the what was available in the plan and how more of that could potentially be incorporated here. And I thank city staff who's already reached out to that commission as well. So, but I think we could build on that a little bit more. This is, I guess, a little bit going back to the archaeological, but I think also in the site assessments, one of the recommendations of BBCI was to local Chumash continue today to carry on the stewardship of preserving cultural sites, features, and landscapes of our Chumash ancestors had for thousands of years in our ancestral sites. If our ancestral sites are disturbed and destroyed, our lasting legacy of having occupied these homelands will be lost. Therefore, consultation with the BBCI can be an important tool to understand the impact of development on cultural resources. I'd love to see that in the site analysis, so specifically call out consultation with BBCI in the site analysis section. So I think that could be really helpful. And then I really appreciated Mr. Orondondo's recommendations for little page 118, big page 136, to incorporate additional sacred site types per his handout that he provided for us. Those are my comments for today.
Thank you. Commissioner Smith.
Yes, thank you. I'll just sort of echo generally the comments that have been made on the chapter two on the archaeological resources. A few just minor things that I noticed on page 141 in that chapter two, there's like a reference to a figure two, which is redacted. That just struck me as a little bit strange. It says redacted, not for public distribution. So I don't know if that should just be deleted. It struck me as a little bit odd. Also, in I believe this is chapter three on page 163, there was a Wikipedia citation. I'm just wondering if we might be able to get a better site source for that. and then on page, and these are I had the large pages. On large page 129, I saw that there was the topographical map. I believe it was from 95. And I just was wondering if there's a newer map. I understand
that it was really the topography that was most important. And so in that sense, some of the other newer features may not matter as much, but if there was something newer, that might be helpful to integrate. Those were just some of the small points I noted. I appreciated in the built environment section that there were some references here and there to sort of these, histories that we may not always think of in terms of, there's a reference to the Bracero program and children of those workers who studied here. Also the nearby prisoner of war camp. I thought that those were really interesting, and I don't know if sort of within the scope of the work that's been assigned, if there's opportunities to flesh out some of those stories a little bit more. And then I also just noticed in terms of the post-war section, I think could maybe use a little bit more information it certainly is a post-war is quite an interesting time in our country's history more broadly. I'm just wondering how that informs the built environment a little bit more, particularly the 1960 to 1969 period. Those are my general comments.
Thank you. Commissioner Miller.
I don't know that I can add a whole lot. I generally concur with the comments that have already been made. I did discuss with staff and Christine before the meeting that on page 9, small 9, large 17, it's a map showing the residential development in Goleta by decades, and some of the dates are clearly wrong, but probably result from how they were researched in the at the county courthouse, where, for example, the neighborhood I live in is indicated to have developed in 1990s decade, and they were, in fact, developed this decade. And that there's some others like that. So I think they just need to double check that. They concurred there does need to be some work. But I think this map is actually important in showing the development of the city, at least residential-wise. Mm-hmm. I had another comment, but now it's escaping me. Maybe I'll think of it after I hear Chair Fuller's comments. But I do generally agree that the archaeological, cultural section needs to be, if we can, needs to have some more meat on the bones and more detail. I'll add that I thought the detail that the statement does have was pretty good and fascinating and interesting, and I'm impressed with their ability to put that all together as a history.
Yes, Commissioner Maynard.
I thought of one additional comment. So this is kind of a small thing, but on page 19, small page 19, big page 28, I was struck by some of the subjective language that was used here. And I think just in general, when talking through history, it would be good to use to stay more centered around the factual data. So for example, it calls a governor, a successing governor, a political opportunist and anti-mission extremist. So just the opportunist and extremist, I was like, is this, whose opinion are we getting here? And so I was just a little bit concerned about that for a historical document. And so I just, being a little cautious of the language, I'd rather hear the facts of that as opposed to the opinions of that.
So if he was convicted of anything?
Or various actions taken. I'm not necessarily arguing against that statement. I don't know enough of the history to say whether that's true or not. It's just, it struck me as particularly as more of an opinion about a person as opposed to the history of that person.
Yeah. Commissioner Smith.
Yes. And I would just add, too, if that Chapter 3, if the scope of work really is the focus on the trees, I would certainly support, you know, retitling that chapter, because I think there's much to our landscape that's interesting that isn't included. So if truly the focus will be on the trees in that section, then I think it would be appropriate to retitle that chapter. Because it certainly made me wonder, like, where's everything else? And I think to Commissioner Miller's point, I also found that map very interesting. And I don't know if some of the trickiness, there's a lot of different colors used, and some of the colors are similar. I don't know if that contributed, and the size of our map for printing is relatively small, but it is a very, I think, useful map, but certainly should be accurate. Thank you.
Commissioner Miller, did you remember what your...
I don't know where this fits, but it struck me as reading the statement, and I didn't read every single word. Mm. I didn't start early enough. This is a big document, and I do intend to finish reading it all, but I had no idea how much detail was here until I got into it, and I kept getting myself distracted and rereading sections as if I was going to take a history test. But one thing that I found interesting was the Elwood area, which played such a huge part of our history in the last 150 years, because it went from being, I think, a cattle ranch to an olive oil production, to an oil industry, to a vegetative preservation site. And to think of all those uses over that period of time, to me, is kind of startling and tells a lot about the history of Goleta. That's my comment.
I'll just wrap it up. I mean, I think this is a very fascinating read, actually, the history of Goleta, and I urge every resident who wishes to stay here in Goleta to take the time to read it, and for all the old timers actually to take the time to read it and provide any corrections and or comments or offer to expand it, whether we include that expansion or not. I think there's whatever they can, whatever our citizens can do to improve this document, we almost have to look to them for this. We've gotten all of the readily available sources. It would be nice to have more of the private individual sources in their history from all aspects and all heritages in the area. So I think this document needs more work, but it's a very great piece, and I'm glad we're doing it. Okay.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. So, director's report.
Yes. Thank you, Chair and Commissioners. What I have today is really mostly a reminder of some of the dates I mentioned last time. On March 12th, we have a public safety meeting. That's tonight at 6 p.m. That's going on at Goleta Valley Community Center. March 13th, 5:30 p.m., Goleta Valley Community Center. There is a complete streets community workshop that you may wish to attend. Then again on March 14th during the day, intended for Old Town businesses and employees, there will be a complete streets workshop at the Goleta Valley Community Center, 9 to 10:30 a.m. March 22nd, an Old Town Sidewalks community meeting at 6 p.m., Goleta Valley Community Center. And April 3rd, a bicycle pedestrian master plan community workshop from 5 to 7 at the Goleta Valley Community Center. And then finally, as I mentioned last time, we also are gearing up for our State of the City functions with business state of the city happening on April 6th from 11:30 to 1:30 at the Bacara, and on April 10th a community state of the city at 6 p.m. at the Goleta Valley Community Center. So hope to see you all there at those events.
Commissioner Maynard.
A quick clarifying question. For the event that is tonight, since that was started an hour ago, we'll probably miss that. Was that recorded?
I don't know. I'm okay. Sorry.
Okay. Will it still be going on?
It might be. It started at 6 p.m., and I don't know how long it is going.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Any comments from the commissioners? Motion to adjourn?
I motion.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Thank you.
You can know that the music's fine, like sparkling wine. Go and have your fun. Laugh and sing, but while we're apart, don't you give your heart to anyone. But don't forget who's taking you home and in whose arms you're gonna be.